Hello, everyone, and welcome to Delta Talks, a TMT podcast by Delta Partners. This is our first episode, and we're really excited to welcome you all here today. My name is Samrita, and I lead the PR function here at Delta Partners. For our first episode, we have Vincent Stevens, a Senior Managing Director, and Gleb Dudka. In today's episode, we'd like to talk about blockchain, more specifically the role of validation nodes in blockchain networks and the opportunity that this presents telecom operators or data center operators. As blockchain and their validation nodes are still frontier tech for many, we're glad to have a specialist on this topic in today's podcast. We're really delighted to welcome Gleb Dudka. Gleb founded and led a staking unit at T-Systems, a subsidiary of Deutsche Telekom, one of Europe's largest telecom groups. Gleb set up the first enterprise unit in the world offering staking as a service and engaging generalized mining on public blockchain networks. He created, in his own words, a mini crypto hedge fund within the corporate environment and led a team that generated seven-digit profits in less than a year by running nodes on Chainlink, Flow, and Celo. From Delta Partners, we have Vincent Stevens, a senior managing director based out of Singapore. He shares the same passion around the blockchain topic with Gleb and has worked with many telecom operators on emerging technology. Over to you, Vincent and Gleb.
Welcome, Gleb. Great to have you here today in our first Delta Partners podcast in a topic which is close to my heart and obviously to yours as well. So maybe to kick off this first podcast, Gleb, we can talk about what blockchain really is. Some of our listeners will have a vague understanding of blockchain. So maybe can you explain in your own words what blockchain is and what the technology brings in terms of benefits?
Yeah, appreciate inviting me to the podcast, Vincent. Great to be here. I guess I would describe blockchain as kind of in three layers. So there are three key components to the blockchain. One is the ledger. The second one is the smart contracts. And the third layer would be the tokens or the digital assets. So the first component is kind of the core of what blockchain is. This is a distributed ledger. So you can think of it as basically an Excel spreadsheet, which keeps track of all the balances of all the participants in the network. So not only the balances, but also the activity. So if, for example, I have $100 and I want to send it to another person, like the ledger will basically update the balances after I have submitted that transaction. And then what puts blockchain, aside, or what distinguishes blockchain from centralized systems is that ledger, that Excel spreadsheet, is not held at a centralized party or a centralized company, but it's actually distributed and synchronized across multiple participants in the network, right? And that brings with it different characteristics, such as it's almost impossible to alter the record. So if one party decides to alter the record, it has to basically alter all the other records of everyone else in the network. So there are all sorts of implications on that. So some of them are around security. Some of them are around censorship resistant. So you cannot really forbid anyone from making a transaction. You cannot stop or kind of cancel or unroll the transaction. So I guess, and so that's the core concept of the distributed ledger technology of the blockchain, right? It creates a kind of a single source of truth as to who owns how much and what sort of digital assets exist in the network. On top of that, you get the second component of the blockchain, which are smart contracts, which is nothing else than just a set of if-then functions. So you can program based on that single source of truth on the ledger. You can program different functions and different types of business logic. So if I send someone $100, then initiate a transfer of ownership of a website domain, for example, right? So and that opens up to basically utilizing blockchain for businesses or building novel business models on top of blockchain. And the third component, which is, I believe, a USP of blockchain, and the key are the digital assets. So blockchain enabled, like for the first time, blockchain enabled the concept of digital scarcity. So you can have a digital asset exist on top of the network, and you can make sure that asset is unique. And if I transfer it to another person, I no longer have it. right? And that opens up, and those three components combined, they open up to all sorts of possible applications of blockchain in business, in finance, in commerce, and so on and so forth.
Great. That's very interesting. So if I can play back what you just said, Gleb, in my own words, you say that it's a distributed kind of database that is held with multiple participants, which then leads to higher security and probably also trust in the network. And it allows to automate smart contracts that allow transactions on blockchain to unfold. Now, one thing that you said is that there's multiple participants. Can you just explain who these participants are, and then specifically to a validation node, which is the center of today's discussion?
So blockchains are networks, right? So the networks have different types of participants. They're usually there is an infrastructure to the network, and those would be, as you mentioned, nodes and validators. So nodes and validators, they make sure to maintain the ledger, right? They make sure to basically check all of the transactions and check all of the activity which is happening in the network. They essentially pack that activity in chunks or in blocks, and they add each new block to a set of previous blocks, and that basically creates a chain or chain of blocks, of which the blockchain word is basically is coming from. So that was like conceptual view, I guess. And then there is an infrastructure view where these nodes and validators, they need to run an open source software of each network. So for example, if we take Ethereum blockchain network, there is an open source Ethereum client, which the validators or nodes which participate in the system and make sure in the network and make sure the network is operating securely, is highly available, and is basically censorship resistant. They run that open source software on their machines. It can be in the cloud, it can be on premise. And thus each of the participants is contributing infrastructure to the network. And that was kind of a generic example, but there are multiple blockchain networks, and each network is designed or is aiming to fulfill a certain role, to bring a certain utility to its users. So one example could be decentralized file storage. So there's basically a decentralized network for storing your files. And then the role of the utility of the network is to provide decentralized storage. And then the actors in the network who are performing that task, they are infrastructure providers, those who are actually contributing storage to the network. Right. So for each network, you have all sorts of different participants and all sorts of infrastructure providers who are making kind of the promise, who are fulfilling the promise or fulfilling the utility of each network and make it accessible to the users of that network.
That's great, Gleb. So basically, in order to decentralize a blockchain network, you require multiple companies or infrastructure players to actually host the decentralized infrastructure and also validating. A concept that obviously is quite prominent in blockchain is consensus. Can you maybe quickly explain how consensus then ties to these validation nodes and creates the security that blockchain promises?
Basically, as we said, every blockchain is a network, and there's a network of nodes and validators. So when you have multiple parties, but then you have a single source of truth, there needs to be a way for this all of these multiple parties who are distributed both geographically, like across different countries, across different time zones, they need to come to a consensus as to what is the actual truth, and the truth being what is the current state of the system, right? And there are different, different ways how they can come to that consensus, and it's called consensus algorithm. And there are different consensus algorithms such as proof of work and proof of stake. They have way different technical implementations and also business implications as to what that consensus algorithm would require infrastructure providers or nodes or validators to do. But the core idea of a consensus algorithm is just the way all of these different validators talk to one another and come to a unified view over the state of the network.
And that task is done by validation nodes, is that correct?
Yeah, I guess it very depends on the network, but yes, mostly those are nodes or the validation nodes. Yeah, whose task is basically to maintain the ledger and to synchronize and to do all sorts of upkeep, which is necessary in running those ecosystems. You could also argue that the nodes and validators are actually the ones who are running these networks.
And this is interesting because for telco operators, they operate a lot of data centers, which form the backbone of today's internet. So is it fair to call validation nodes the equivalent of the data centers of the blockchain network? Is that a fair representation?
Yeah, I think it is. So our thesis at T-Systems when setting up the project and initiative was that it's actually a duty and core business of telco companies to provide Web3 or public blockchain infrastructure. And the argument was as follows. So telcos have historically providing public network infrastructure. It was with telephones, they're building masts, and then with the Web2, with the internet as we know it today, the public network infrastructure takes form of data centers, optic cables. That's the core business of telcos to provide and to enable that. And as we now see blockchain or public blockchains arguably creating kind of a value layer on top of the existing internet, so-called Web3, the public network infrastructure of this new Web3 takes form of nodes and validators, as we argue that they are actually the ones, they are the backbone of these networks. And with that logic in mind, you can well argue that that's actually core business of telcos to also provide this new form of infrastructure. The only difference being that, I guess there are two main differences. One is that because blockchains are decentralized, telcos can no longer monopolize the infrastructure provisioning to these networks. And then the second key part is because the business model of Web3 or blockchain infrastructure provider, i.e. validator, relies on digital assets, like is somewhat different to the traditional business models. That basically means that the telcos need to get comfortable with these new business models before they can actually provide that infrastructure.
And that brings us to the economical model of a blockchain, because I understand that data centers rent out servers, rack space, interconnection services. But how does a validator node get paid? Well, who pays a validation node for the services rendered to the blockchain network?
So unlike with Web2, unlike with current internet, there's no central party there's no one large entity or centralized party who is making sure that the network is running properly and thus has the budget to basically subsidize or to pay to the infrastructure providers. With blockchains, they are the open source technology, and each blockchain relies on its own kind of currency or its own native digital asset, which is then acting as a currency in that network. Right. And each blockchain system recognizes that the validators are not like they are not NGOs. So they need to make money with the infrastructure they provide. So blockchains address that by minting, by having a certain budget or inflationary budget of their own token supply or digital asset supply, which is being minted for reliable infrastructure provisioning. So in other words, if I'm a validator and I contribute my resources to a certain blockchain network, I can expect to earn a certain portion of the digital assets of that network. So those digital assets, they act as an incentive for me to run that infrastructure. And the key difference is that there's not a single entity designing how those assets or how that money is being paid out, but this is all encoded in the protocol itself, in the software which everyone in the system is running. So no one has an influence over how much I'm being paid, or so that's basically provided by the system. So this creates positive incentives for someone to contribute infrastructure to run these nodes, to run the validators, but they are also a disincentive. So there is also certain punishment which comes with operating a node. So if your node goes down, for example, or is unavailable or it gets hacked, some of the digital assets which you're earning or which you have to kind of provide in order to operate the validator, they can be burned or they can be taken away. So that creates kind of this carrot and stick like incentive mechanic where the validators are incentivized to perform their job well. And also the key here, and that what made our, I guess, journey within the like telco company easier is that we have to optimize, in order to do our job well as a validator, as a node operator, we need to optimize for very traditional set of things or KPIs, such as uptime, availability, and security. So this is something which telcos have been doing for decades anyways. They just need to take the same value proposition, apply this to a new market, and then basically acknowledge and be aware of the token or digital asset incentive mechanic which are taking part, which are happening in that network or in that system, and basically and go on with that.
Yeah, and that's what people refer to as the tokenomics, right? Where you create a closed loop own economical model to incentivize the actors in your network. So the way I mean, in layman terms, the way I see it is that a validation node on the Ethereum network would get paid Ether for the services rendered to the Ethereum network. Now, the follow-up question then, Gleb, would be, what defines the value of an Ether? Like, how I know it's trading at $2,000, give or take, but what defines the value here? Because why wouldn't it be $1,000 or $10,000? Because that might be a question. The variability of the price of the underlying token is something that people get worried about sometimes.
Yeah, I guess this is a very complex question because it really boils down to how do you value assets and how do you value networks? Right. So what Ether, the unit, like the Ether, the currency, or Ether, the utility token of the Ethereum blockchain, what it actually is, it provides, it's like, it acts in a way of a digital. So Ethereum is kind of a virtual machine, a virtual computer, which you can rent in order to run your applications or to run your code. And the payment form for being able to rent this, the capacity of that virtual machine is the Ether. The utility token. And then you have to ask, okay, what is the price? How much am I willing to pay to rent that machine? What sorts of applications am I going to run? And what sorts of benefit I as a either application developer or a company or whoever, what benefit am I drawing from having my applications run on Ethereum? And that would then answer how much am I willing to pay to have my applications basically hosted there, or how much I'm willing to pay to interact with these applications.
So basically, if I want to build and execute a smart contract on Ethereum, I need to pay the network with Ether, which I need to buy in the open market. And then the validation nodes get rewarded the same Ether. So in essence, there's demand and a supply for Ether. So, and that forms the basis of a marketplace that then allows for price setting, I assume.
Yeah. There's no doubt there's also an element of speculation layered on top of that, but the core utility and I guess like the fundamental value of ETH, of Ether, would be exactly as you said.
Okay. And we hear sometimes proof of stake, proof of work. How does that relate to the way validation nodes get rewarded or act in the network?
Yeah, so the proof of work and proof of stake are the two different consensus algorithms, but then each of them has an implication on the infrastructure provider or on the validator. So Bitcoin would be a prime example of a proof of work system where the function of your revenue or your reward as an infrastructure provider who is thinking whether I should provide infrastructure to this network, and the network being Bitcoin for the sake of this example, would be that proof of work relies on actual hardware and on electricity, which needs to power that hardware. So the more hardware I have and kind of the easier my access to electricity is, the more revenue am I being able to generate. With proof of stake, and then proof of work has different criticisms, such as it can be wasteful for the environment. Proof of stake systems, they are somewhat different because the function or the way they work is in order to, like, my revenue f- function or would depend on how much trust can I get in the system to perform my validation job or act in my validation role properly or correctly. This is then the trust is in blockchain systems is measured by capital, by the amount of tokens, by the amount of digital assets I can have in that system. So I guess an example here would make a lot of sense. So I, as an Ethereum 2.0, so the next stage of Ethereum, which is shifting to proof of stake from currently being proof of work, is that in order to run validator, I need to post a collateral, or I need to post a bond. So I need to lock 32 ethers as kind of an insurance against me going down or against me being hacked or against basically a validator acting in a dishonest way. So, and some in many networks, this bond can also be provided by other participants, by other network stakeholders. So, for example, if I don't have a bond, which I guess kind of speaking in practical terms, most if the telco would like to run a validator, most often the telcos would not have that self-bond themselves because they would have otherwise to go and buy those digital assets to post as collateral as bond. What they can do, and so it's called delegated proof of stake, which is I guess most of the proof of stake currently, they can rely on network stakeholders or other participants to trust them with their ether to kind of bring the bond instead of a telco having to put up the bond. The bond can be put up by the participants in the network who trust this giving telco to perform the validation correctly. So this can be seen as my reward or my success of my participation as a validator would depend on how trustworthy I am, how trustworthy is my organization to be able to perform the validation job or act as a validator in a secure and highly available manner.
So basically then in a proof of work, my rewards are proportionate to the amount of processing power that I deliver. Yeah. And in a proof of stake, it would be the amount of the underlying token that I put up as a bond. Yes. Would that be a fair equivalent?
Yeah. Underlying token as bond or the trust, because the token in the end, the token represents trust the people have in you to perform your job in the right way. Because otherwise, if you don't, they can get punished, as we said. So yeah. Some of the tokens they trusted you with can be taken away or burned by the protocol.
Briefly spoken about the opportunity of telco operators running their nodes as a logical extension of the Web 2.0 into Web 3.0. But some of the questions might be, what is the money that you can expect running validation nodes? Do you have any examples, Gleb, from your previous experience on what the returns on investments are or how much potential there is for a telco running validation nodes?
Yes, I guess there are a few notes which I need to make beforehand. So one is in the blockchain world and in like blockchain infrastructure world, the business models often tie to a certain digital asset. So your revenue and even sometimes your costs can be need to be accounted for in those digital assets. So that means that your revenues and the costs they can be both rather volatile. So that would be one. And the second point would be that this proof of stake validation business models, they're very highly scalable. So basically it takes the same infrastructure to accommodate, let's say 1 million worth of tokens it would be to accommodate like 100 billion worth of tokens, or as we discussed, kind of trust, which is then embedded in you by the network participants or users. In specific numbers, I guess it very much depends on the protocol. Each protocol has its own economics, has its own business models as to how do you provide infrastructure and what you need to optimize for. So that has then implications on costs and the setup, whether it's on-premise, in the cloud, and so on. From the networks we have previously launched on, the break-even can range anywhere from few days. Like the total break-even on the project can be range can range anywhere from a few days to a few months. So I would say the opportunity and the reason for that being is that still the market is very immature and fragmented. So there's still a lot of, arguably still a lot of space for new participants to enter, especially the ones who can monetize the trust their organization have. So, right, we discussed that the revenue is a function in a way of the trust in the network. Large organizations or enterprises, they arguably have already done, they have already track record of trust and of performing these services, optimizing for very traditional KPIs. So that shouldn't be a problem for telcos or established enterprises to gather a decent amount of trust, i.e. tokens in the ecosystem in order to generate profit in the end.
And you say that there's still room. I was just checking for Ethereum network specifically, and there's over 100,000 nodes today already. Do you think there's room for more? Does the network need more than that?
In the end, you could rephrase that question, I guess, and ask, is there room for more trust in the Ethereum network? So is there room for trustworthy players to come in and to run their own infrastructure? And I would say this is independent from the number of nodes, because Ethereum has like a limitation on how much one node, how many digital assets one node can accommodate. So I would argue that there's still a lot of demand for very professional and trustworthy infrastructure providers in any blockchain network.
It's an interesting topic, Gleb, that you correlate trust with the monetization potential. And telcos obviously run quite reliable and trustworthy data centers. So that brings us back to the topic of there is truly an opportunity for telcos to run some of these validation nodes. Now, if they were to explore this business of blockchain validation, what are some of your learnings and the things that telcos need to know going into this opportunity? What would you tell them?
I guess there needs to be a lot. So the opportunity is there, and arguably it is proven that it's there and the market is there. And the second question is, how could a potential company execute on that information? And I guess it all started because of the topic of blockchain being rather complex. There first needs to be a significant amount of education, which needs to take place, because a validator operation in a company would basically involve all sorts of departments. So you need to, like, in order to run this business model, a company would need to be able to buy, sell, and earn crypto assets, like digital assets. It would need to account for this in one way or another. There needs to be a view on the legal and tax treatment of those of the revenues and of the proceeds of those assets. Then, because the digital assets are a novel asset class, there needs also to be partnerships with infrastructure providers for that asset class, those being custodians and brokers, because you need to get money in the system and to get money out of the system. And there also needs to be understanding of the underlying business models. And all of these kind of in bulk has to be well communicated and educated, because all of these participants, all of these departments who in the end have a say in whether the business model is successful or not, or whether it's at all possible in the company or not, they need to be educated on the rather controversial topic, which blockchain is. So that would probably, I guess, that I would say probably is the hardest and the longest part of setting a business model like this. And there needs to be someone who is pushing who is pushing those topics, let's say, beyond the initial criticisms, which all new information, new innovation basically is being faced in a large corporate.
Thank you, Gleb. That's a lot of information to digest and great information to get from you. What has become clear is that blockchain is a technology that is quite innovative and definitely here to stay and has the potential to transform businesses, right, as we see in DeFi currently. Telecom operators as infrastructure providers and especially as data center operators have a clear right to play as validation nodes into the blockchain infrastructure, and therefore create also a new monetization stream next to their core business. As you rightly said, Gleb, telcos have a duty to participate. It's no longer an option. If they want to stay relevant in the decentralized infrastructure, they need to become validation nodes and take an active role in those decentralized networks. Thank you very much. I hope you enjoyed this podcast. And until we speak again on blockchain in our next session.
Thanks. Appreciate being here.